I'm J. Bradley Menick, and welcome to Arts and Letters, a program providing opportunities for the celebration of the arts and humanities. Today, we'll be talking with Arkansas filmmakers Josh and Miles Miller, as well as producer and cinematographer Catherine Tucker and Gabe Mahan, about the trials, tribulations, and processes, and panic, the vexation and joy of making a movie. Their 2011 short film Pillow screened at over 30 festivals, including 5 Oscar qualifiers. The film picked up 12 awards along the way, including Best Short at Dead Center Film Festival, Oxford Film Festival, and Indie Memphis. They have just completed the final cut of their film.
Hey, need a lift?
I'm going your way, if you need a ride.
Just a ride.
So let's settle down in our seats with freshly buttered popcorn and a cold soft drink and listen to a short scene from All the Birds Have Flown South.
She coming in tonight?
You could look at the schedule.
I don't think so. There's too many weirdos around here, you know what I mean?
Screenwriters, directors, filmmakers, brothers Miles and Josh Miller, and producer and cinematographer Catherine Tucker and Gabe Mahan, welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having us.
So at this point in your life, Miles and Josh, you've both flown south. How is it your filmmaking journey has found you nesting in Little Rock?
Arkansas is our home. We were born in Little Rock in the late 70s and raised in Bryant. And now we're back in Little Rock and we're trying to make a career out of being filmmakers. And in this day and age, you don't necessarily have to be in LA or New York in order to do that. The world's a lot smaller with technology. So we chose to be here and we want to make our films in Arkansas.
And I think a lot of it comes from what you know and writing from what you know and is what we do. And we're Southern to the bone. And the stories that we've seen that we collect from observing other people and their situations, from the poverty to the good and the bad, the food and the violence or the, you know, religion and everything else like that. That's where we're from.
Catherine and Gabe, how'd you meet these guys?
So Catherine and I are married. And so one of the first films that I worked on, Miles was producing. And I got hooked up with Miles and we kind of just hit it off the bat really quickly. We just had a chemistry together and we started hanging out and watching films, and introduced me to his brother, Josh. And I mean, that was really early on. It was like within a month. And so we've just literally been thick as thieves ever since.
We love a lot of the same music too. I think that brings us together.
Now, how about you, Catherine? How'd you meet these guys?
I actually was home in between films for a good 3-month stint, and I rented a camera from Gabe. I was going to do a short documentary about my high school football team. And then our relationship evolved from there. And I ended up going with him to the Oxford Film Festival. And that was the year that Pillow was in the festival, which is the reason we were going. And it won the festival, and when I saw it, I was blown away. Not to discredit Arkansan filmmaking, but, you know, I just had no idea that this kind of talent was being born here. And so we sort of all evolved as friends, and then when All the Birds screenplay was ready and they asked me to produce it, it was just an absolute no-brainer.
You don't even know this guy.
What happens in this movie?
It's a story about a middle-aged guy that loses his elderly mother, and he's a guy that's sort of guided by these signs that drives him to a diner where he meets a waitress and becomes obsessed with this waitress, starts trying to replace his mother with this woman, and the conflict is she's married this terminally ill and abusive guy.
You're not coming to my house, coming after my wife!
So our lead starts caring for him to get closer to her.
It starts with a stunning scene of birds in the trees, and there's hundreds of them, and then all of a sudden they just disperse.
Yeah. So the birds at the beginning of the trailer that fly the tree, and they're actually at the beginning of the film too. I mean, we open with that. While we were editing, one of our editors, Russ Galusha's, his brother's our other editor, right by his house, he saw all these birds in a tree. And he called Gabe and said, hey, there's a bunch of birds out here. I know that y'all didn't want a lot of birds. We had talked about this, but they're here if you want to shoot them. And Gabe grabbed his camera, shot them. And then when we went in to edit the next time, Les had just put them in there at the beginning of it to surprise us and say, hey, what do you think of this? And we were like, it stays. I mean, it just felt right for the trailer opening.
And then I guess after the edit and everything, you can justify it. The only other bird in the whole movie is the one caged, and which is freed at the end.
This scene, this is not a spoiler. It's at the very beginning of the film. We leave this tree empty. I mean, all the birds have flown away.
So yeah. Who were some of the actors?
Paul Sparks is our lead. He's playing the role of Steven Miner.
Paul Sparks is known for Boardwalk Empire, and then he was just in the latest season of House of Cards.
Pretty big name.
Pretty, mm-hmm. Yeah. We felt really good about Paul. When Jeff Nichols was shot Mud in Arkansas in, I think, 2011, and we had three people, that all three of them worked on our crew, that had worked on Mud as well, and they knew that we were trying to cast the film. And three different people at different times said, y'all should look at Paul Sparks. So after the first one, we were like, okay, the second one, maybe we should, you know, start looking that direction. After the third person, which we were familiar with his work from Boardwalk Empire and had seen him in some other films, but he got excited about it very quickly. Yeah. And we had a Skype conversation with him, and he said, I want to come to Arkansas and make this film. So Paul was our lead. Joey Lauren Adams is another lead role from Norfolk Rock.
Joey. She's the waitress.
Yeah, she's the waitress.
She and plays then, the role of Tanya.
And then Dallas Roberts is our supporting actor that plays her husband.
And he's known from The Walking Dead.
You're listening to Arts and Letters. We're talking with filmmakers Josh and Miles Miller and producer Catherine Tucker and cinematographer Gabe Mahan about their movie, All the Birds of Flint South.
She's resting.
Well, let me know if you need anything.
You could look at the schedule, couldn't you? Let me know if she's coming in.
I don't think so. There's too many weirdos around here. You know what I mean?
Oh, no. Yeah, no, I understand.
Let's talk about the diner scene. Set this scene up for us.
Yeah, on this scene, Steven has gone back to the diner, stalking, basically, Tanya.
And Tanya's the waitress.
The waitress, played by Joey Adams. And he gets there, and Joey's not working at that moment in time. He's just waiting around, drinking his coffee, hoping to get to see her again.
I understand.
Let me know if I can get you anything.
You talked about how many of these scenes came from your childhood, where you and your parents would go to the Waffle House.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You wanted to do this at the Waffle House. Sadly, Waffle House wouldn't let you, but you did it in a Denny's.
Well, an old Denny's. Yeah, it had all the equipment still in it, and it was right across the street from the Waffle House that we basically grew up in. I mean, our dad, he still goes to the Waffle House a couple times a day.
So what's stunning about this scene is what isn't said. He's sitting there basically with his hands folded. He has his glasses on. His look is off. He's wearing this suit that kind of looks like 1975. His hair's parted oddly. He looks upset.
For sure. He looks like there's something that's not okay with this guy. For sure.
This is like something in the background of how it was written. Like the suit was kind of in mind to be most likely his dad's old suit, a little bit too big for him and stuff.
And what we did when Paul got to town, he picked out his own suit. We wanted him, the actor, to pick out.
Where'd you get it?
He went to a suit store, and he was trying to pick out, because it was supposed to not be the most attractive suit. And when he was trying them on, and the guy was like, kept giving him encouragement, going, man, that looks great on you. That looks great on you. And he was like, but he knew it didn't.
We love the idea of Paul being able to pick out whatever felt right, and he picked the right one.
And it's brown, it's earthy, it's
really sad. It's perfect for the character, and yeah, his hair parted.
And those glasses.
Those were like his father's. He didn't really even need glasses.
Yeah,
you know? He's just trying to be like his father, because his mother, for his mother's love, his mother loved his father. So he was just trying to imitate his mother. Later in the movie, he imitates Jimmy to try to get her love.
And trying to become these people in a way. When we wrote it, we didn't want him to have any belongings. There's nothing that belongs to this guy. So he doesn't have a room. The suit is not his. That's his mother's car.
The chameleon, but anti-chameleon, because there's no way this guy can really be a chameleon for anything, right?
Exactly, yes. But we thought that was interesting, that everything you see belongs to somebody else, and it's not his.
Your screenplay was originally called The Lonely Bridges. Could you tell us a little bit about how the script evolved?
It was two scripts, and the first, we knew we wanted loneliness. Two people trying to bridge their loneliness. And definitely one is a degenerate waitress. And the other's just a guy that lost his mother. And we just kind of combined the two stories. But the film changed, and then it changed back kind of to what it originally was through different rewrites of the script, because it changed and it kind of got watered down through a couple of years of rewrites and stuff like that. And then it was just like, man, if we're going with this, we're going all the way.
How did the script change from script to screen?
Once the actors were on board, there was rewrites for them before we even talked to them, just kind of what we thought how they would better portray the character. And then once we found the locations, kind of rewritten a little bit more with that. And then like once we figured out budget and how we had to change things for that. But on a daily basis, things were changing. If we lost some shots, we would be rewriting right there on the spot how to make this work, how to make this work. And that's where everybody comes together.
From my standpoint, the script changes when it hits screen because of budget reasons. And the main thing I feel like we lost was that we were going to have hail in the last 15 minutes of the movie. And then we found out the hail machine was $10,000 a day. And the guy to run the hail machine was $1,000 a day. Yeah. And so then we decided to add that in as a sound effect.
I kind of always say there's three stages of a movie. There's the movie that's written, there's the movie that's shot, and there's the movie that's edited. And that's the final version of the script. Because of schedules, because of budgets, there has to be concessions made, especially as an independent filmmaker and someone who works underneath the constraint of very tight budgets. With that all being said, as a filmmaker, you concede to that process. And instead of it being something that hampers the production, it's something that we kind of, we're used to it. And if the day's getting away from us, we figure out exactly what we need and how to shoot it, or figure out a way to get it all and get it all maybe in one shot.
I saw a quote on Facebook today that's, make art with your friends, just start there. And that's sort of what I feel like we've done. And so luckily our friends are very, very talented. What I love about this film and how we put it together is that this is a homegrown project. This is a true product of Arkansas and what kind of bang for your buck you can get in Arkansas to make a movie here. You don't hire smart people and then tell them what to do. And I think that was part of the reason we were able to get this film done, because we were so understaffed. We couldn't pay everybody their rates. We paid everybody minimum wage, but it was really a labor of love, and we trusted every single person we put in these key roles, and they took off, and they're all incredible.
What about your crew?
Besides Catherine, producer, obviously, Gabe, cinematographer, Mitchell Chris was our production designer. Dwight Chalmers is our sound designer. We have two brothers, Les and Russ Galusha, that are our editors. And Les also does visual effects.
Les also does
the best job ever.
The special effects makeup.
Les does everything.
Yeah, Les does everything.
Les did like four jobs.
Les is also designing our credits.
Yeah.
He's awesome.
I mean, the list
Les
goes
higher. Less. Less.
The higher Less.
Less and Russ.
Less and Russ.
Less is more. That's what
Less is more.
You're listening to Arts and Letters. We're talking with filmmakers Josh and Miles Miller, and producer Catherine Tucker, and cinematographer Gabe Mahan about their movie, All the Birds Have Flown South.
Some bruise pain, for Christ's sake. So, you have like some samples that you could just give me right now?
We don't have any samples for narcotics, but I will call in a prescription
today.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the hospital scene. That was done, what, at Saline Memorial Hospital?
It was. They let us use a waiting room. I mean, the hospital was still functioning at the time. So they put us in an area where there wasn't a lot of people, but still, I mean, we had to sort of work.
So just to set the scene up visually, there's basically two folks talking in front of the typical glass window that you would be admitted to.
It's fairly early. What's happened in the scene is that Stephen, Paul Sparks' character, has offered Tanya and Jimmy to give them a ride to the hospital. Jimmy is terminally ill and is having dialysis, so he gives them a lift to the hospital. What we've seen in this scene is that Tanya is in the bathroom stall crunching up her opioids and snorting them. And so she comes back and meets the doctor at the window where she's trying to get more medication.
Trying to get more pain pills.
Yeah, more pain pills.
The doctor, played by Graham Gordy, tells her they can't give free samples of narcotics. But Steven's just waiting and watching, and Jimmy starts getting suspicious. This is the first day they've met, but he's already seeing Steven look at Tanya.
And the real takeaway from the scene is when they're talking at the end of the scene and we see Steven focus in on the doctor saying, you need to get some more help at home.
Have you thought about getting any help at home?
Because he had helped his mother all through her life, like taking care of her medications and everything like that. So he could do that, you know, probably bringing her water and her pills.
What surprises you but is obvious in this is that so many of these scenes are about manipulation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But they're transparent manipulation.
Yeah.
So for the doctor, it's obvious.
You know what? I've been in enough emergency rooms and I've seen this thing happen. So yeah, they think they're being sly and it's like you're the only person who doesn't get it.
Tell us about the soundscape with Joey and the music. It's an amazing sound score.
Joey Santiago is our composer.
From a little band called the Pixies.
Yep, from the Pixies.
I know he had done some movies before. He did this one for you guys, which was a really neat get. I mean, to get the guitarist for the Pixies is pretty cool.
We would send him cuts of scenes and everything.
Yeah, we flew out there and sat down with him and went through the film and just watched the film with him and just made some notes and just get a general idea and, like, talk about the movie. I mean, it took a while.
It took over a year.
Yeah, it took over a year, I think, to get the music where we wanted it. We were a huge fan of his and the Pixies, of course, and I think he did Weeds. I think he did the first season score for that and does great work.
We would then have a phone conference with him and give notes. And
you know, I mean, he's a guitar player. I mean, he plays other instruments as well, but I mean, he's known for being a guitar player and building the Pixie sound. And we were basically telling him, use less guitar. Like, let's do some other stuff. I mean, you know, and I think he really nailed it. And it took some massaging and figuring out exactly what we wanted. I'm sure we weren't the easiest people to deal with.
Well, you knew with the limited dialogue that you had in this that the music had to be a character.
Exactly, yeah. But we didn't want it to do, like, too much of the heavy lifting.
It's funny because at this stage in our career, we don't have all the bells and whistles or tools or time or money that people that are working on large studio pictures do, but we have to be creative and good enough that those people will at least notice us to get our next jobs and to move forward with our careers. It's kind of this funny little world that you live in where it's like, yeah, you have to make something great, but here's a Barbie camera, go. You know, but I mean, of course, we didn't shoot with a Barbie camera. We were very fortunate with some of the relationships that we had with, like, Panavision, and they just hooked us up completely and had a wonderful camera package. And I think we got every dollar you could squeeze out of our budget. When people do know our budget, they're kind of like, that's not possible.
So let's talk about the big wide world of funding and securing funding. Catherine, you're the producer.
This whole film was a group effort, and Josh and Miles are producers also, and we raised the money together, and Josh is the largest investor. And so that's a good place to start because it helped us be able to say we're putting our money where our mouth is, and here's how much I invested, and it kind of helped us get the ball rolling. Raising money is a really gruesome task, but it can be very rewarding, and I think we ended up with about 14 investors total. And a lot of them are friends now, and they're supporters of the arts community, and they're now involved in the filmmaking community and care about the filmmaking community and are helping other filmmakers in the state. So I do love that part of it, and I think that's my most positive note about their fundraising.
Let's return to our conversation with Josh and Miles Miller. And producer Catherine Tucker and cinematographer Gabe Mayen about their mirroring scene from their film All the Birds Have Flown South. Yeah, let's set this one up. It's a really strong visual scene.
We're really pleased with the way that the scene turned out with the music and everything and the intercutting back and forth from Tanya and Steven. We mirror the two of them in a mirror going back and forth intercutting between them getting ready. You know, he's combing his hair.
So he's in his house.
Yes.
Looking in the mirror.
Yeah.
And she's in the hotel room.
Yes. And the way that we shot her is handheld, shaky. It's very unstable. He's the opposite, but he's really not the opposite. Right. There's nothing stable about him, but I guess in contrast, he's definitely more stable than she is.
He's just not on drugs.
Yeah.
I mean, he's sober-minded crazy.
Then we, you know, we even mirror her, like, chopping up the pills with
his mother's dentures.
Yeah, he uses his mother's dentures to crunch these pills up, and he's making his own
cocktail.
Yeah.
And she needs some pills, and he's got some pills. His mom has a lot left over. So
this is how he can help her and win her heart.
Yeah, but there is definitely something nefarious at this point. I think you reach a point where something clicks with the audience where it's like, okay, I think we should watch this guy a little closer.
You used the house to mirror his psychological state.
At the end of the film, pretty much he's cracking, you know, mentally. He's getting closer to whatever his goal is that you find out at the end. The house starts magically cracking apart.
The house is physically cracking, so we have this magical realism. You see the house falling apart on him, and I mean, it's very obvious
his
that
world
what's happening.
Is,
yeah, it's his world is sort of collapsing in on top of him.
Is he still coming around like an injured bird, needing a nest, a place to rest his head in a song? Still you take him. Lord knows I don't want to compete. Still I sleep in the very sheets he's been in.
The last word spoken in the film is he opens the door for Tanya and says welcome. And it's like welcome to his world.
Where was the house shot?
The house was in North Little Rock. It was perfect. It was an empty house. I mean, we just loved the
vibe.
Yeah, the vibe of that house was really, it worked perfectly.
It was pretty strange. There was, what was that? This is just from the shoot, but a calendar still up on the wall from the
1989, 80s. I think. It was perfect.
It hadn't been lived in, I don't know how long, but yeah. Since the 80s. I think that was probably the last person to live in it, right?
Swallow him whole like a pill that
I like the end credit music, too. What was that song?
Sheets.
Sheets.
Sorry, yeah. Damian Gerardo.
Because that's a neat song.
It's an amazing song.
It says a lot about the story, too, the lyrics. It was funny,
Sound designer
turned us on to the song. He's like, this song reminds me of your script, you know, before we shot it.
I think we were out scouting. We were just looking around at locations, and then Dwight called and was like, hey, whenever y'all get a chance, listen to this Damian Gerardo song, Sheets. And I put it on immediately. Me, Miles, and I think Gabe may have been with us, and we listened to it, and we were like, this is our song. Like, we have to have this song, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, everything about it, not just the lyrics, but I mean just the feeling of that song. I mean, I just love everything about the song.
Yeah.
So, Gabe, you talked to me about how you sat in a room for 12 hours a day for 2 weeks trying to get the color right.
Coloring's a little bit like watching paint dry. We actually had 5 days because coloring is extremely expensive, and it's basically just what you do at the end of the film. We did our Technicolor Postworks New York, and we worked with a fantastic colorist named Sam Daly. It is tedious, and you sit in there for 5 hours. You sit in a dark room. It's very hard not to fall asleep. But the big thing with this film, because it is so dark, it's about stop under. Anybody who's familiar with photography, you have a key point where your lens wants to be, considering all the settings, and then you can underexpose or overexpose. And so this one was underexposed about a stop across. And so basically it was then tone mapping, finding all the details in the shadows and finding the details in the highlights and making sure that those are kind of across the board so that you see a very rich visual scene that has some depth to it.
Tell us about this moment, because I think it's always the most interesting moment, where you make the film, it's done, but there's this long pause where you hear nothing. It's crickets. And this has been going on for you guys for 5 years, 6 years.
Six, seven.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I guess it's just the nature of it, but it does come in waves. I mean, we wrote the script in 2010, and then we had to go out and find money, so that's another wave. Then production was a wave, and then
actually shooting it. Yeah.
And then festival circuit. So it's like, I mean...
And then waiting for distributors.
Yeah, even though it's coming in waves, they're always sort of working up to that next wave. If you're not doing something, then nothing's happening.
It's in the can, it's done. What are you doing for it?
Just doing some social media marketing. Flix Premier said they're going to do a big marketing push. They ended up giving us an early release. They had originally said end of February.
They pushed it to
December. So yeah, they pushed it right around the holidays. I guess
the 23rd?
The 23rd of December. They wanted that, I guess, Christmas.
But you're doing other things, right? That's the way to go. You keep on just making more stuff.
We just produced a short, and we've got a couple scripts we're working on. I think we probably want to shoot another short before we do another feature. And just trying to figure out what the next thing is.
So how would you advise your younger selves? We go 5 years back, and we have the magical ability to have Josh and Miles talk to your younger selves about this particular film or films in general. Yeah. What would you say?
I mean, that's an interesting question, but I don't think anything, because I think if we would have known the information,
you wouldn't have done it.
Then we wouldn't have done it. I mean, it would have been, I think not knowing is what, going into this first feature was really important.
I mean, we didn't have an idea how insanely difficult this was going to be. Even doing, a bunch of short films and stuff, we couldn't imagine.
People go to the movies for fun and as a hobby. And I think that a lot of people think that filmmaking is a hobby. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they think of it as something that you kind of do for fun in the evenings, or... It is extremely hard work, and it's especially in when you're starting out as independent filmmakers, it's very laborious, and it's all about persistence. And don't count your money until you've got checks in the bank, and leave a little bit more time for everything than you would expect.
How about you, Gabe? What would you say to your younger self?
To tell my younger self, I guess I would say be patient. You need to calm down and be patient. And let this thing just kind of happen, because that's exactly, what everybody, I think, kind of was saying. It does not happen overnight. It's just not a thing that does happen overnight. And when it does happen, you need to be ready. You need to have your A game ready.
I mean, I've never, heard somebody get an award at the Academy Awards and say, this was the easiest thing I've ever done in my life. It's always, this took 8, 9, 10 years, 12 years, however long it took.
I've been developing this project for 20
forever.
Years.
Or, yeah. So... like Catherine's saying, it is difficult, but I'm glad to be doing it.
It's so rewarding. Yeah, it's really rewarding.
There's nothing like seeing something that you've created, having it affect a group of people, watching a flickering light on a screen. It's pretty powerful stuff.
There's nothing else like it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Broadcast from the studios of KUAR in Little Rock, you've been listening to Arts and Letters. Thanks for joining us. To check out past episodes, go to artsandlettersradio.org. Leave us a comment there and let us know what you've thought about the program. Thank you to musicians, songwriters, and composers Amos Cochran, Damian Girardo, and the incomparable Joey Santiago. Thank you to Mr. Chris Hickey, who recorded the show. Thank you to Sticky's Rock and Roll Chicken Shack for keeping music alive and well in Arkansas. Generous funding for this episode was provided by the Arkansas Humanities Council and the National Endowment for the Humanities. Thank you to producer Catherine Tucker and cinematographer Gabe Mahan, and to Josh and Miles Miller, whose persistence and hard work has helped us all move a step closer to our dreams. For Arts and Letters, I'm Jay Bradley Minnick. Let us be mindful of the words of Stanley Kubrick. Perhaps it sounds ridiculous, but the best thing that young filmmakers should do is to get hold of a camera and some film and make a movie of any kind at all.